Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the age of AIDS right after this. You know, if you're earning about $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. Government gets the other 60%. Well, that's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you think your share isn't enough, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year, then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year, and you're going to net 25%, and the government gets 75%. Which means if we're working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more dollars, or 8% more money, 8% more take-home pay. You produce double and get 8% of it. Now, isn't that just real special? That's why I contend there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package, and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that you pay so much and receive so little. Let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for homeschool. Now, to order your free general law CD package, just call direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine when you get there. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Tax and Status School is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. Call now before you forget. Okay, we're talking about AIDS, where to come from, what's the history of it, and more importantly, if you get to the end of the series here on the program, how do you avoid getting it, and if you've already got it, how do you get rid of it? I'm going to show you how to do that. I'm going to show you how to get rid of it if you've got it, and without using drugs and chemicals and poisons, because that's not the solution. The drugs and the poisons and the chemicals that you're taking are part of the problem, not part of the solution. Now, I can't tell you how to cure AIDS because that's a copyrighted trademark that belongs to the American Medical Association. It's a very profitable business. It's kind of like cancer. Now, we've been looking for a cure for cancer for how long now? Let me see. President Nixon, back about 1970, 1, 2, 3, along in there, he said, now, what we got to do is conquer this evil scourge of cancer, and I'm going to earmark $2 billion. To do that. And every year they spend billions of taxpayer money looking for a cure to cancer. They've been at it since 70, 80, 90, 100. They've been at it for 35 years and still haven't found a cure for cancer. There's nine cures to cancer. It's been around since 1900. But you didn't get it from the AMA, and you're not going to. And that's because it's a $500 billion a year business. That's an industry. Boys and girls, that's $500 billion a year industry. We're not going to throw that away by finding a cure to cancer. The last thing that the American Cancer Society wants is a cure to cancer. The last thing that an oncologist wants is a cure to cancer. I mean, we're going to give you a $25 shot, give you an inoculation, make you immune from cancer for the rest of your life, and throw away $500 billion every year? Come on, kids, let's grow up and get real. And that's where you're at here with AIDS. AIDS is a cash cow. And everybody here in the Western world that gets AIDS is going to spend around $100,000. I mean, after all, if you get AIDS and you're going to die, you're going to spend whatever they tell you to spend. And the number is about $128,000 a year. Now, I showed you last time what a ripoff that was, because the cost of manufacturing these drugs is so inconsequential that the bottle that holds the pills costs more than the ingredients and the drugs that the pharmaceutical company is making. And I showed you last time that they pay 1 cent for 7 grams. Boys and girls, these drugs that you're taking are sold by the milligrams. I mean, they're selling you these pills. And I was talking to a druggist student of mine the other day, and he said they got pills out there for as much as $100 a pill, $100 a pill. You know, $4 or $5 a pill is common. $1, $2, $3, $4. Well, listen, when they sell you a pill for $1, you know, you get 100 capsules or 100 pills in this bottle, and you pay $100 for it. You pay $1 a pill for it. Well, the drug manufacturer that made it is selling it by the milligram, and they paid about 1 penny for 7 grams of it. 1 penny for 7 grams, and they sell it to you by the milligram. They pay a penny and then sell it to you for $100. And you're complaining about gasoline prices, and the oil companies gouging you. But all of these drugs are a crime, and people that take drugs are drug addicts. And America is a nation of drug addicts, and the objective is to make you totally dependent upon the drug companies so that they can milk you as a cash cow. This is why we want people to be heroin addicts and cocaine addicts and et cetera. If we can get you hooked on these habit-forming drugs like cigarettes and alcohol, we can keep selling it to you constantly. And we can sit back and smoke cigars and drive around in chauffeured limousines while you pay the bill. That's what the objective is. It works like a shot. I don't want to participate in the program. If you want to participate in it, well, that's your choice in life. But I thought I'd share with you what this cause and effect relationship is in AIDS. AIDS isn't a drug or a medical problem. AIDS is a behavioral problem. AIDS is the penalty that you pay for a broken law. So let me show you that. I told you I'd look that up for you. There's three statutes, three laws here in the scripture that deal with this thing of disease. And you thought disease, you know, typically when I was a kid growing up, we thought Eddie O'Neill was walking down the street one day, along with David Wagner and George Gordon and Mike Lyons and all us guys. We're walking down, we're about 12 years old now, 13, and we're walking down the street. And Eddie O'Neill was breathing air just like all the rest of us, and he inhaled a polio germ. And that's why Eddie O'Neill got polio. And the rest of us didn't. He was just unlucky. You know, if he'd had his head 3 inches further to the right or the left when he inhaled, he would have missed that polio bug and probably lived his life without getting polio. That's what we thought. No, that's not where disease comes from. People think that disease is the results of an unlucky roll of the dice. Or I just don't know what causes that. You know, modern medical science, they say, well, we don't know what the cause of that is. I'm going to show you what the cause is. God Almighty is the cause of disease. Listen to this. In Exodus 15, verse 26, he gives us a little reminder here. He says, and he said, if you will diligently hearken to the voice of the Eternal your God and will do that which is right in his sight and will give ear to his commandments and keep all of his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon you which I have brought upon the Egyptians. I'm the Eternal that healed you. Do you hear that? I'm going to read it for you again. I'll open your earballs and listen to this. You want to know where polio comes from? You want to know where AIDS comes from? Cancer, heart disease, stroke. You want to know where these diseases come from? It comes from God himself, live and direct, personal. Kind of like sending a message to the London Daily Express or the Telegraph and saying, I'm the terrorist that set that bomb off. You know, the terrorists, they'll blow something up and then they want credit for it. And so they'll say, well, this is the communist front for this or that organization over here. Give us credit for this bomb. Well, here's God. He says, if you will diligently hearken to the voice of the Eternal your God and will do that which is right in his sight, not what's right in the sight of the government in Washington or Sacramento or the AMA or somebody else, but what's right in the sight of the Creator God. You do that which is right in his sight, and if you'll give ear to his commandments, you know the Ten Commandments, you give ear to his commandments, and keep all of his statutes, and you'll practice all of his laws, he says, this is the guy speaking now, he says, this is God, I will put none of these diseases upon you which I have brought upon the Egyptians, because I'm the Eternal that heals you. You want to get healed from AIDS? God is the healer, not Marcus Welby, not Merck, Pfizer, or Mercy Medical Center. Now, if you want to pay attention, now I'll show you a little bit more. And over in Deuteronomy 7, verse 15. Deuteronomy 7, verse 15 tells us a very similar story. Repeats it three times. He says, the Eternal will take away all of the sicknesses and will put none of these evil diseases of Egypt which you knowest upon you, but will lay them upon all of your enemies that hate you. So he says, look, I won't put any of these diseases on you. I won't give you AIDS, herpes, and VD. I'll give you gonorrhea and heart attack, stroke, and cancer if you obey me, keep my commandments. Disease, boys and girls, is a behavioral modification tool created by God himself for the express purpose. In the same way that the state creates a punishment, a penalty for the violation of traffic laws. The objective is to change your driving behavior, and God is intending to change your social and your sexual and your criminal behavior. And, of course, he doesn't succeed all the time. In fact, he doesn't succeed very often at all. And people pay the penalty. They pay the piper. There's a disease for every crime. Now, disease is only one punishment that you get. There are other punishments that can happen to you. You violate an economic law. And poverty, you know, when you see somebody that's poor, poverty is the result of broken economic law. You see somebody that's sick, well, that's the violation of health laws. And the same thing we see here in secular law, a guy goes out here and he robs a bank. And maybe he gets away with it. And then he says to himself, well, that was a pretty easy way to make money, so I'll go out and rob another bank. Maybe he gets away with it. You know, you don't get caught every time that you go out and break a law. You don't get gonorrhea every time you go to the whorehouse. But you run this risk, and that's why they call this risky behavior. You don't get AIDS every time you go out and commit sodomy. But you run the risk, and as you keep doing it over and over and over and over and over again, at some point in time, it catches up with you. If you want to test the law of averages, you know, just put $20 on the pass line at the crap table and throw the bones. And the odds are about 50-50 that you're going to win. And you'll probably win, and when you win, just let it ride. Now, you know, you got 40 bucks sitting there. Throw the bones again. The odds are 50-50 that you're going to win. And you'll probably win. And now you'll have $80 sitting out there. Just leave it ride and keep throwing the dice. And at some point in time, you'll lose it all. And you might throw 5 straight passes, 10 straight passes. I was sitting at a crap table one time, and a guy threw 15 consecutive passes. And then I got to looking this up. I said, well, what's the record? And the answer is 27. It was done at Monte Carlo back in the 1920s. A guy threw 27 consecutive passes. Now, the chances of that happening are like, you know, winning 3 Powerball lotteries in succession. I don't know what the hell the odds are, but it was some fantastic number that was way out in the stratosphere someplace. But again, the moral of the story is there's a cause and effect relationship here with this disease and with your behavior. We call it moral behavior. Deuteronomy 28, verse 60. I was looking at Deuteronomy 28, 12 the other day, and I couldn't find it. I'd tell you how to go look it up. It's 28, 60. Listen to this. Deuteronomy 28, 60 sends us a little message here. He says, and also every sickness and every plague which is not written in the book of this law, them will the Eternal bring upon you until you be destroyed. You see, diseases that aren't written in this book of the law, diseases that we've never heard of before, like AIDS, have now come upon us. And these diseases didn't come here by accident. They were created in the week of creation. By the sixth day of creation, God had created all these diseases. Bubonic plague was a disease that he used back in the Middle Ages. Okay, well, now the new disease is AIDS. Now, the objective here is to get you to change your behavior. Let's learn from the mistakes of somebody else. Let's watch the AIDS guys over here and watch what they do. Because as we go through this report, this frontline report that I'm giving you, is simply the history from 1959 through 2006 of all that we know about AIDS. And you can see very clearly from the report that there are certain things that you do in life that have high risk. When we compare those high-risk activities with the laws of the Bible, we find that every one of them violates a law of the Bible, a law of God. So that's why God told you, don't eat blood. And so, you know, we Americans, we don't eat it, we mainline it. We shoot it right into our veins. I'm sitting there saying, boys and girls, that's not very wise. Now, I'm sure that many of you have had some blood transfusions, and you're probably sitting there saying, see, and I came out just fine. Well, that's fine. You don't get gonorrhea every time you go to the whorehouse, but it's a high-risk endeavor. Just keep after it now, and you'll come up with some kind of a bloodborne disease. But if you never have a transmission, you won't come up with these bloodborne diseases. If you don't stick needles in your arm trying to shoot up with heroin or cocaine or crack or something like that, then it lowers your risk. Just like driving around those 35-mile-an-hour curves, you know, you drive around them at 35 and you run very little risk. Well, in 1984, they developed a blood test for this thing called AIDS. In addition to isolating the virus, virologist Dr. Robert Gallo of the National Cancer Institute developed a blood test to screen for infection known as the ELISA, the ELISA test, and it gains wide use starting in 1985, and it reveals that the extent of infection was worse than anybody had imagined. It was like an iceberg, and we were only seeing the tip of the iceberg, recalls Dr. Anthony Fossey. He was the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Many activists voiced concern about the confidentiality and the civil rights issues once a test is developed. If you get tested, this is America, and we have all of these computers, and we have all of this information sharing. So will your employer find out, and will your insurer find out, and will this knowledge be kept private? Asks Cleve Jones. And others questioned the benefit of getting tested when no treatment was available. When the HIV test came out, my partner and I, notice the word my partner, not my wife, my partner and I, debated what to do, recalls Dr. Chris Bayer, director of the Johns Hopkins Fogarty International Center's AIDS International Training and Research Program. We decided not to get tested and instead just be very, very monogamous, committed to each other, and extremely safe, and be absolutely religious about condom use. And so here's two gays, and they're going to use condoms, and they're going to practice safe sex. Okay. Again, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But this guy's saying, well, we want to take the turns at 45, 55, or 65. But we want to be safe, so we're going to buckle our seatbelt. Children, if you're going to take turns at 45, 55, 65, you bet you need to buckle your seatbelt. If you're going to eat fat, you need health insurance. I wouldn't argue with that. But the point is, I don't have any health insurance, and that's because I don't get sick. And some people say, well, you never know. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. I just explained it to you. I know I'm not going to get sick. Why is it? Because sickness and disease comes from God. It's a punishment that we receive for the violation of these laws. And I'm not breaking any of these laws, so I'm not going to get sick. So why would I want to go out and buy health insurance? I live up at 1,200 feet. Why in the hell would I want to buy flood insurance? Flood insurance is for people that live 25 feet below sea level in New Orleans. They need flood insurance. I don't. I might need some tornado insurance, but I don't need hurricane insurance. We don't have hurricanes here. You people in California might need earthquake insurance, but you don't need hurricane insurance. I mean, no, just be intelligent people. If there's a risk, why don't you eliminate the risk? Now, I used to fly airplanes, and I flew airplanes under power lines and bridges. That's a high-risk activity, kids. Fortunately, I didn't get killed in the activity, and when I woke up and got to be of age and got some smarts between my ears, I quit doing it. And I'm suggesting that if you're practicing these risk behaviors, quit doing that. You know, wise up. Now, here's the announcement of the virus. Remember, we're in the year 1984 now. On April the 23rd, Health and Human Services Secretary Margaret Heckler announces at a press conference that American virologist Dr. Robert Gallo of the National Cancer Institute has isolated the virus that causes AIDS. 4 years earlier, Gallo had isolated the family of retroviruses that cause leukemia called HTLVI and HTLVII. Maybe that's HTL6 and HTL7. Gallo is convinced that the AIDS virus is part of the same family, and he names it HTLVIII. Maybe that's HTL8. It's later determined that Gallo's virus is improbably similar to the virus discovered in 1983 by the French researchers who had sent him a sample of their culture, and it's likely the same virus at the press conference. Heckler gives Gallo sole credit for the discovery. A scientific dispute between the two teams festers for almost a decade until an out-of-court financial settlement gives them each team credit for its work. You know, just follow the money. It's money is what we're after here. You know, disease pays a lot of money. Obeying God's laws doesn't cost you anything, and it pays great dividends. And it's the bane to medicine. I mean, picture this. Just picture. If everybody in America obeyed all of the 18 health laws of God, there would be no disease. It would be the death knell to all the hospitals and the doctors and clinics. There wouldn't be any tooth decay. Think of it. No cancer. If we had a cure to cancer in the morning, we'd have instant depression. It would destroy a $500 billion a year industry overnight. You can't have that kind of an economic hit on your economy. Now, of course, people depend upon sickness and disease. It's a part and parcel of our economy. It's a part and parcel of our way of life. I don't like it, and I don't want to participate in it. So I'm going to concentrate on health. I'll let the rest of you people concentrate on disease. All right. A third scientist, Dr. J. Levy, at the University of San Francisco, also isolates a retrovirus, which he names ARV, AIDS-associated retrovirus, in 1986. A compromised name is settled upon. It's called the Human Immunodeficiency Virus, or HIV. Now, once the virus is discovered, new discoveries occur at a rapid pace. Scientists begin to sequence the virus's genome and learn that it targets a specific cell in the immune system called the CD4 T cell. That's your immune system. Now, if you want to cure a disease, it has to be done with your body's immune system. That's for a cure. Now, there's no cure for AIDS. There's a treatment. There's no cure for cancer. There's a treatment. There's no cure, you know, for most of these diseases. They just have treatments. Now, there's a cure for scurvy. It's called vitamin C. Now, there's a cure for pellagra, like it's vitamin D. So there's a vitamin, there's a nutrient. And that just tells you the part of the story that you need to know. All disease is caused by, either a poison, that's a toxin in your diet, or it's caused by nutritional deficiency, one or the other. So you got a poison or a toxin. Well, AIDS over here is a poison or a toxin. You get two sodomites together. And the poison in this case, I covered this about a week ago, talking about sex. And I said that a man's semen, male sperm or semen, is like plutonium. I mean, that stuff is dangerous, toxic stuff. And there's a law in the Bible that tells you how to deal with it. You know, you got to wash it off. You got to keep clean. And these guys are not very cautious. They're not very clean. They got this bad toxin, you know, when it's used correctly. Now, plutonium is a great, great substance. And I'm sure if it's used correctly and handled cautiously, it's great stuff. I was watching a guy milk a rattlesnake one time. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. This guy picks a snake up and he milks the snake, you know, just kind of like it's a business as usual. And listen, he's reached down in a cage and grabbed the snake by the back of his head. I mean, I'd have been on that snake, you know, with a stick and five tools, and I wouldn't want to touch him without gloves that were a half an inch thick and so on. You know, these guys do this every day, and once in a while, I guess they get bit. But by and large, you know, this guy's been milking snakes for years. I'm an old-timey cattleman, and I know a little secret here, and I'll share it with you. Some people, you know, I go out in the field, and I bring the cows in, and there's a bull out there. Aren't you afraid of that bull? And no. Oh, God, I'd be terrified of that bull. Well, see, the bull, when he charges, always closes his eyes. And that's why bullfighters are always successful. Once in a while, you know, the bull must keep his eyes open, you know. But most of the time when a bull charges you, he closes his eyes. All you got to do is step out of the way. He's not looking at you. And I guess there's a little trick to picking up a snake. You know, you pick up the snake. I watched this guy do it, and I said, boy, I ain't going to touch that thing. But, you know, he knows a secret about that snake that I don't know. And so I'm fearful and terrified of it. And people watch me, and they're fearful and terrified of these bulls. It's just because I know a little secret that they don't know. All right, so now I'm just sharing a little secret with you here that if you get sick, you got a disease, you broke a law. You couldn't get sick without breaking a law. And the law you violated was some law of the scripture. There's 18 of these health laws. You practice these 18 health laws, and you're not going to get AIDS. course, you're gonna stay away from Flo's place, and you're gonna stay away from sodomites, and you're gonna stay away from blood transfusions. And you know, when you do that, all of a sudden you get out of the risk categories. You know, if you don't gamble, you won't lose anything on the crap table. You don't see me losing any money on the crap table. I quit gambling. Now, there were some bathhouses. Remember these famous bathhouses in San Francisco back in 1984? Well, after a protracted political battle, Dr. Merv Silverman, he was the director of the San Francisco Department of Public Health, he ordered the city's bathhouses to be closed. Now, these bathhouses where gay men could go to relax and have sex. It was, you know, a bathhouse in San Francisco is like a whorehouse down on Mission Street, where they were considered an important symbol of community and sexual freedom, and many gay men did not support their closure. It goes back to the reality of the lives that we were living as incredibly sexually repressed people. Let me underline incredibly sexually repressed people. I'm going to underline that. I'll be right back with that one. Explains activist Cleve Jones. I still believe that it is the behavior that spreads the disease, not the location where you're engaging in the behavior. I don't know, boys and girls, you know, I'm just an old country boy, but it looks like to me these bathhouses invited these people. It's like a whorehouse, like a Mustang ranch. It invites all you people to come into the whorehouse. Now, one thing that they do in the whorehouse is that they check those girls for disease regularly. They have medical checkups all the time. And they license them. And, you know, they try to keep them as clean and wholesome and pure as you can. You know, it's like trying to keep a pigsty just as clean and pure and wholesome as is possible. Now, this guy, Cleve Jones, he says, we were incredibly sexually repressed people. Well, I'm one of those incredibly sexually repressed people. I don't deny it. You know, my creator came along and he said, hey, Gordon, I made you. Now, let me explain to you how the product works. If I went out and bought a car, I got one here the other day, and in the jockey box, there was an owner's manual. And in this owner's manual, it says, here's what kind of oil you put in the transmission. Here's what kind of gasoline you put in the gas tank. Here's how often you have to grease it. And here's how to keep it up and make this thing run. Now, you don't have to follow these directions. I mean, you could be an incredibly repressed driver. You know, an incredibly repressed new car owner. And you could put diesel fuel into the gas tank. And you could put ATF fluid into the crankcase. And maybe you could put motor oil into the differential. I mean, you know, these are choices that you have to make. But I don't think you're going to get the kind of performance that this thing was designed to deliver. So I'm one of these incredibly sexually repressed people. And I'm using sex just exactly the way the owner's manual tells me to use it. I haven't gotten gonorrhea. I haven't gotten any sexually transmitted diseases. I don't have AIDS. I don't have any fear of getting them. I know where they come from. I know who lays them on us. And I know how to avoid it. So I'm living this sexually repressed life, free of disease. And I love it. I love it. And I just don't want to get AIDS. I don't want to get gonorrhea. I don't want to find out what sexual freedom with AIDS, herpes, and VD is all about. I want to avoid that. I'm not telling other people to avoid it. I mean, if you want to get out from under your incredibly sexual repression, well, then I guess the bathhouse is the place to go. But I'm not going to. Well, after Silverman's order, the 14 bathhouses sued to reopen, and the judge rules that they can stay open if they hire monitors and expel anyone engaging in high-risk sexual activity. Well, what is high-risk sexual activity anyway, kids? Isn't sodomy a high-risk sexual activity? Isn't that what C. Everett Koop told us and said, hey, you better use condoms? You know, I guess if you're going to go to Mustang Ranch, you'd be a lot safer going in with that girl if you wore a condom. I wouldn't deny that. Takes half the fun out of it, but then, you know, you want to have safe sex in a whorehouse, I guess a condom is the way to go. But I think a better way to go would be to stay the hell out of there. That's what God told you. And I showed you that last week or week before, and I said, listen, God is not sexually repressed, and I don't think God has sexually repressed you or anybody else. But he has designed a process here for reproduction. And this process has certain, you know, snags that go along with it. And you got to be able to follow the directions for the use of the product. You know, you wouldn't send your kid out on the freeway to play with matches and nitroglycerin, you know, would you? Because nitroglycerin is dangerous, and matches are dangerous, and playing on the freeway is dangerous, and the kid's 5 years old. Don't you want this kid to grow up and be a real big He-Man and teach him how to use matches and teach him how to use explosives and teach him how to keep from getting killed out on the freeway? And then, you know, you get to be 20. There are freeways and they're dangerous places, but we try to use it intelligently and it becomes a real asset. We use explosives and they become a real asset. We use fire and it's a real asset. But don't we learn how to do that first? Well, that's what I brought out in my series on sex. You know, in the Bible, God says, now listen, this sex over here is something that's got to be handled, and it's got to be handled correctly. And this AIDS thing over here is the penalty for incorrectly handled sex. So don't you think that maybe you ought to handle it a little better? Don't you think you ought to learn how to handle it? Now we come up to 1985. Now, remember a guy by the name of Rock Hudson, 1985? This guy, Rock Hudson, movie star, got AIDS and died. Let me give you a reminder here, and we'll take a look at Rock and the boys. You've been listening, or you are listening, to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and a biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on contact desk. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors and publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, and the phone number is area code 417-273-4967. And while we're talking about giving credit where credit is due, this is a report put out by www.pbs.org. This comes from the Public Broadcasting System. And if you'd like a copy of it, just type on www.pbs.org. Then go to the Boston television station. It's WGBH, Boston, WGBH, /pages/frontline. This is a frontline story. It was a two-part series. The videotapes are usually about $35 postage paid, or you can get this report free off of the PBS website. Go to Frontline on PBS and get it. Well, in 1985, in response to a request from Congress, a report, review of the Public Health Service's response to AIDS is prepared by the Office of Technological Assessment, a nonpartisan office designed to analyze complicated scientific issues. The report outlines the state of scientific knowledge, but more significantly is highly critical of the lack of federal support for research, in particular from the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, individual PHS, that's the Public Health Service agencies, have consistently asked the DHHS to request particular sums from Congress. The department has submitted requests for amounts smaller than those suggested by the agencies, and Congress typically has apportioned amounts greater than those requested by the department, the authors write, of greater impact than holding general funds of the Public Health Service, PHS, and its agencies about even or decreasing it, have been budget requests for decreases in personal ceilings. And at critical times, several of the Public Health Service agencies have actually experienced decreases in personnel. And also in 1985, Project Inform formed after watching desperate friends and acquaintances self-medicate with alternative therapies and black market drugs from Mexico. Martin Delaney forms Project Inform to share information and accelerate advances in treatment for people living with HIV. Now, when you get HIV, you're going to get scared and you're going to get real nervous. It's the old proverbial whore in church. And at this time, modern medicine, they didn't have anything to offer you. The truth is, they don't have anything to offer you today. They don't have any cure. They got a treatment. In those days, they didn't even have a treatment. And so people, like they were in the 40s, terrified of polio, would take all kinds of crazy medicines. And it becomes a great boon to frauds and charlatans. And I'm not talking about just frauds and charlatans selling concoctions from Mexico. I'm talking about frauds and charlatans like Pfizer and Merck and Roche and those big pharmaceutical companies. They're as fraudulent as the phony baloney medicines that you buy down on the street corner over here when you're motivated by one of your five motivators, fear. And then you say to yourself, well, gee, I got to have a medicine for this. No, wait a minute. I've already discussed it. AIDS is not a medical problem. AIDS is a legal problem. AIDS is a legal problem. What you need is a legal solution. Now, I tell my students when they come to law school that the truth of the matter is there's no magic silver bullet in law. And you don't walk into the traffic court then you've been accused of speeding, and there isn't some magic silver bullet that gets you off the hook. You're either guilty or you're innocent, one or the other. If you're guilty, then you're going to pay your fine, and you need to stop that behavior. That's the purpose for this traffic court. It's behavioral modification. It's a legal problem. I mean, you don't get a speeding ticket and then run off to the doctor and say, oh, my God, I've got to have a pill. I've got to have some kind of medicine to solve this. I told you. You got a legal problem. You're in violation of certain laws of the Bible for which this disease is the penalty. Legal problem. It's not scientific. It's not medical. So if you're looking for a medical solution to the AIDS problem, you're going to be looking in vain. You know, if you're looking for gold, and you're out here, you're a prospector, and you put on your scuba diving outfit, and you're out here looking in the ocean for gold, I think you're going to be bitterly disappointed. There is some gold suspended in the ocean water, but you're not going to get it out. So the bottom line to this is that you need to be looking for gold where there is gold, in some gold-bearing deposits. If you're looking for copper, you need to be looking and mining in a copper-bearing deposit. If you're looking for a solution to a problem over here, then you need to go to the right source. And I tell my students, it's easier to stay out of trouble than it is to get out of trouble. It's easier to drive the speed limit and stay out of trouble than it is to speed with all of the sophisticated fuzz busters and the radar detectors and all the rest. It's just easier to comply with the law and avoid the problem than it is to get out of the problem once you get into it. And that's where you're at with age. You got a legal problem here, and honest to God, in my view, it's easier to stay out of the problem than it is to get out of the problem once you get into it. But, you know, once you get into the problem, it's not impossible to extricate yourself from it. You don't die when you get a parking ticket or a speeding ticket or some kind of a traffic violation. You can go solve that problem. But you're not going to help yourself any by going out and repeating the behavior over and over and over again. And that's what these sodomites are doing. They just continually go out and repeat the behavior over and over and over again and say, well, I'm not going to change. I had a farmer here one time says, nobody's going to tell me how to eat. We're talking about food and clean and unclean meats and pork and fat and blood and one thing and another. So nobody's going to tell me what to eat. At the time, he was 45. 2 years later, he was 47, died of a massive heart attack. He was right. Nobody's going to tell him what to eat. But he ain't going to live to be 70 years, 80 years old either. And I'm sure that these people that want to be, you know, they want to avoid sexual repression. Well, okay, you can avoid sexual repression, but I don't think you can live to be 70 or 80 years old in the process. So if long life is one of your goals, well, then maybe sodomy ought to take second fiddle. You know, just tuck it away in your heart and see what you think. Now, there was an AMFAR formed. The American Federation for AIDS Research, called AMFAR, is formed by Dr. Matilda Krim and Dr. Michael Gottlieb to unify AIDS nonprofits on the East and West Coasts. And actress Elizabeth Taylor became the national chairwoman after, and actor Rock Hudson gives the organization $250,000. Now, The Normal Heart opens. The Normal Heart, written by Larry Kramer, is a play depicting the early years of AIDS, the epidemic, and the founding of Gay Men's Health Crisis, the first AIDS activist organization. In 1985, Rock Hudson, the movie star, died. News of the actor's disease breaks in July when he is visiting Paris for experimental treatment. After returning to the United States, Hudson allows his doctors to publicly confirm his AIDS diagnosis, and he died in Los Angeles in October. I think this was the first huge American celebrity and worldwide celebrity diagnosed with the disease, recalls Dr. Jim Curran, who was then leading the CDC's AIDS task force. And it became a People magazine story rather than a New England Journal of Medicine story, and it was very important from the point of view of public awareness. Then came the Ryan White story. Ryan White denied entry into school in 1985. A young fellow by the name of Ryan White, a hemophiliac teenager who had contracted AIDS through contaminated blood products, is barred from attending school in Kokomo, Indiana. Well, in the summer of 1985, after a protracted court battle, he was finally allowed to attend classes, but his family was ultimately forced to move to nearby Cicero after a bullet was fired into their home. White is embraced by the public as a symbol of the disease, and he and his mother, Jean, take advantage of media attention to educate the public about AIDS. He died in 1990. His funeral was attended by Elton John, Michael Jackson, First Lady Barbara Bush, and 1,500 others, and is broadcast on national television. Then in 1985, the first International AIDS Conference was held. The bulk of the conference, organized by the CDC, that's the Center for Disease Control, and held in Atlanta, Georgia, is dedicated to understanding the science of AIDS. Several scientists present research estimating huge AIDS prevalence in Africa. For example, infections among 66% of children in certain areas of Uganda and among 88% of Kenyan female prostitutes. And Dr. Max Essex from Harvard School of Public Health presents data suggesting that the origins of AIDS can be traced to the African green monkey. Well, I mentioned that to you a program or two back, that the first AIDS case that's recorded was in 1959. 1959. I went to a seminar by this guy named John Coleman. He was an MI6 spook from British intelligence, and he said that he was in on, he knew about, and that AIDS was a disease created by British intelligence to be used in war against the Russians, most of the Chinese, most probably. And that they decided that it wasn't a good agent because it takes so long for it to have an effect. Now, I wouldn't doubt but what it's part of the New World Order program to reduce the Earth's population by 90%. But it wasn't something that was created by British intelligence in Sierra Leone. It was created by God Almighty in the 6 days of creation. British intelligence discovered it, probably from somebody that died from it. Then they synthesized it, then they built a laboratory in Sierra Leone, and that's where they perfected it. It was for germ warfare. That's where it came from. Now, the story of these green monkeys over here is a part and parcel with the fiction that goes along with the money that's made by the pharmaceutical industry on this thing of AIDS. In other words, it's a cash cow. It makes a lot of money. And we've got to maintain the persona that, gee, it's not your fault. You were just walking down the street and got bit by this green monkey, and it was no fault of yours, and it just happened to. Kind of like Eddie O'Neill getting polio. Now, that's not the way the game's played, kids. If that's what you want to believe, that's fine with me, but that's not the truth, and that's not where this thing came from. The other day, I was watching some program here on TV, and some scientist went over to Finland, and they dug up 3 or 4 bodies over there, and they got people who had died from the Spanish flu back in 1918, remember? Now, I can't for the life of me understand why anybody in his right mind would want to dig up one of those bodies and bring that flu, which killed about 50 to 100 million people, back to life or bring it out in the open, but they did. They've got that stuff now sitting in a laboratory somewhere. Now, you can just about bet that if this scientist figured out that he could dig up these 4 bodies, that some military guy, some army general, some army guy, figured that out years ago, and they've already got that avian bird flu or Spanish flu, they've already got that stuff by the tons, stockpiled someplace, you know, like Fort Detrick, Maryland, ready to use on the Chinese or ready to use on the Russians as a germ warfare agent, like SARS. Or they've already got the agent, and they're just about ready to unleash it upon us. I get kind of suspicious about these people running around, dinking around with these kind of deadly diseases. You know, it's like playing with plutonium. Well, okay, but it isn't something that we ought to be playing around with. These are deadly serious issues. And AIDS is a deadly serious issue. And as I said before, it's not a medical problem. It's a legal problem. And if you're looking for a medical solution, you can look forever. They've been looking for a cure to cancer. Cancer is a legal problem, boys and girls, not a medical problem. And if you want to look for a medical solution, they've been looking since President Nixon decided to spend $2 billion back in the early 70s on finding a cure to cancer. There's no cure been found. There is a cure to cancer. It's easier to avoid than it is to get rid of. It's just like AIDS. It's easier to avoid than it is to get rid of, but it's not impossible. But why in the world would anybody want to get AIDS so he can get rid of it? You know, even with an IQ of 80, you know, I can figure out a little better solution than that. The prevalence estimates are later discovered to be hugely inflated and tainted by false positive results in people who had been exposed to malaria. The political ramifications were enormous. Many African leaders resent that the continent in Africa is considered the source of the problem of AIDS that came from green monkeys, and other policymakers are skeptical of future projections because of the inaccuracy of the initial estimates, which takes us up to 1986. A treatment breakthrough occurred in 1986. Early clinical results of a trial led by Dr. Margaret Fishy shows, listen to this, zidovudine, or AZT, slows the progression of AIDS as patients' immune systems regenerate. Only one of 145 patients receiving AZT in the trial died, while there are 16 deaths of the 137 patients receiving a placebo. The study's monitors recommend stopping the trial immediately and rapidly approving the drug for wider distribution. AZT had been developed with public money in the 1960s as a possible cancer treatment, and the government gives the use patent to Burroughs Wellcome, the pharmaceutical company that sponsored the trial. Burroughs Wellcome prices the drug at as much as $10,000 for a year's supply. Now listen, I mentioned this to you in the last program. You know, we sit there and we listen to these pharmaceutical liars come to us and say, well, you see, we spent billions of dollars developing these drugs. That's a lot. That's a lot. The pharmaceutical companies are in league with the government and private donations that come in from places like the American Cancer Society or the American Lung Society or TB or whatever. And here's what happens. You and I, Joe Sixpack on the street. Somebody hits us up and they say, hey, listen, we want you to donate money to this or that cause or organization to find a cure for cancer. We want you to march on cancer. And so they have these fundraisers to raise money. And then the research money goes to these research institutes, which are sponsored by, owned by, and operated by Pfizer and Merck and Hoffman, LaRoche, and the rest of these big pharmaceutical companies. And here's a classic example of it. Public taxpayer money back in the 1960s developed AZT. Then, after it was bought and paid for, this company comes along and says, let's try this AZT on these AIDS patients and see what happens. And they got a positive or beneficial result. So they said, okay, well then let's license us. So they turn around and they take this discovery, which they got free, and they sell it for $10,000 a year to each AIDS patient. And remember, they're buying the ingredients for this AZT for something on the order of less than a penny a gram. I think it was 1/7 of a cent a gram, and then they sell it to you by the milligram. Then they make something on the order of $6 per gram profit off of this. The bottle that they put the AZT in costs more than the ingredients that went into the pills that went into it. And that's just where reality's at, kids. Now, I'm not faulting the pharmaceutical company for making these kinds of profits. I mean, after all, business is business. And if a willing buyer meets a willing seller and the seller says, hey, you know, I found a pocket knife one time, I paid nothing for it, and I sold it to a guy for $5, you know, what am I, a price gouger? He's a willing buyer, I'm a willing seller. I don't see any problem with that. Now, President Clinton is hot and heavy after this AIDS thing. He found out that for $800, he could buy the ingredients for these AIDS cocktails like AZT in India for $800 a year instead of $10,000. I just saw a report here, I think, and this report right here, it's down to $275. And I showed you the other day, I said, Jesus, that's a 58 mark in profit in that drug if the cost is $275. And no, the cost is somewhere around a penny a pill. You know, if it cost them a dollar a pill and there's 100 pills in a bottle, it's $100, and they sell it for $275, they got nearly 2 marks in it. There's nothing wrong with a profit margin like that. But, you know, don't get mad at the gasoline companies, you know, for charging or making 21%, 21 cents a gallon profit. I mean, it's nothing compared to drugs. All right, that takes us up to 1986. We'll take it up right there next time, 1986, in our story on AIDS, the age of AIDS, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening. And good night, friends.